This is Harry Murray at Murray's Flash Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. This is sort of our question and answer period on our podcast. You've sent me emails, you've called me, you've asked me to discuss that. So let me just start on a random list and going down the list. The trico hatch is on some of our best dreams. I love fishing the trico up there in the lower part of the Latour. This is a wonderful hatch. Fish go one-on-one with small flies. I was fishing up there on Falling Springs one day with Vince Marinero and had a fish out there that was coming up and neither one of us could touch him. And Vince says, try a different location, see what you can do. So I moved around him and finally took him. That I actually timed that brown trout on Falling Springs coming up to Trico. In 60 seconds on my watch, that brown came up and took 67 tricos. Now, I fished a size 24 trico on, I fish it on 7X, but I'm not reluctant to go to 8X if I need to. Obviously, you want a rod that's got a delicate tip on there to give you a good presentation. But the trico hatch is coming good, Latorte is great, and Falling Spring is great. All right, let's look over on some of the bass stuff. These hoppers are getting big enough now to attract some sizable bass in the river. One time I was right over here behind Edinburgh. I was walking down the stream bank on a little cliff that paralleled the stream, and I heard some fish rising below me. I looked back, and I had inadvertently chased a whole bunch of hoppers in the river. So I go back up the river, get out in the stream, and fishing Ed Shanks Latorte hopper back against that bank one-on-one, I caught bass all afternoon on those hoppers. Fish them close to the bank. Hay fields are probably a choice spot. Pasture fields are good, but big bass do take big hoppers. Jeff and I were floating the James one time in along a big cut bank like that. He took an enormous smallmouth bass on a hopper. All right, now let me tell you about the smallmouth bass that chase Shiner Minnows. One evening, I was headed for a riffle on the South Fork of the Shenandoah. I was going to wade all the way across the river, head downstream down there around down below Foster's Landing, and fish that one of my favorite riffles over there. Well, when I got over to the far side, it was coming toward dusk. I had probably an hour of daylight left. There were a tremendous number of smallmouth bass out chasing Shiner Minnows in the water that was probably 2, maybe 3 feet deep. There were so many bass out there chasing shiners. I put on Charlie Waterman Silver Outcast, went one-on-one with bass out there chasing those shiners. And, you know, I'd catch one, I'd glance upstream, here'd be another bass up there chasing shiners. I worked my way up the river going one-on-one with fish out there that were actually chasing them, and I never did get down to my riffle that I had originally planned to fish. That is a lot of fun. Now, it's going to be low light level. You're not going to find that going on a whole lot in the middle of the day. But early in the morning, late in the evening, heavily overcast day, those bass come out and chase those Shiner Minnows. And these are some bigger bass, too, so go for them. All right, now, the tails of the pool, in fact, I'm going to hit that this evening. The tails of the pool at dusk is some fantastic fishing with what I call our floating chub minnow and our floating dace minnow. The chubs and the dace are always in the tails of the pool. I'm talking about water a foot to 2 feet deep. They're always there, but in the low light levels late in the evening, a lot of big bass move back into the tails of those pools to chase those minnows. I put on my floating dace or my floating chub, go into the riffle below, turn and wade up into the tail of that pool, and just go one-on-one with them when I see them out there chasing the real minnows, or if I don't see chases going on, I actually just fan my cast all across there. I wade up into the tail of the pool till I'm getting up into water a little better than waist deep. And then if it's still productive, which in most cases it is, I'll move over to the shallow bank and work on up through there. Murray's shiner, I mean the Murray's floating dace, the Murray's floating chub, and it is fantastic. One thing you got to be a little careful on this, when you're shoving that out in water 2 feet deep and the bass are back there, it's not at all unusual to see a bass coming from 10 feet away to take my fly. Now, you got to use some willpower, because if you hit him too soon, you just took it away from him. If you wait too late to set the hook, he just spit it out. So experience will show you when to set the hook on him. And use a firm line hand strike on that. But you want him to be right on there when you set the hook. A lot of the guys are wading wet now. I use booties under my wading shoes. I'm doing away with my waders this time of the year. And I'm using these Sims booties underneath. The booties are the same thickness as the boot on your wader. So allow for room for that when you're buying shoes or when you're coming in and getting shoes. Just try them on with the booties to be on the safe side. Let's go on down the river. Okay, I have some friends that are floating the river in kayaks and canoes, especially on the South Fork, and they want to float 12, 15 miles. If that suits their fancy, go for it. Personally, I like short float. I don't like any floats over 5 miles. I used to guide in one stretch over on the South Fork. The whole float that we did on the guide trip was 1.5 miles long. We never did cover all the water to my satisfaction. I like to float till I come to good-looking water, beach that boat upstream of the water I plan to fish, and then get out and go to each one of those productive areas. The grass beds, the deep cuts between the ledges are always effective, but I like to beach it and get out and wade. Now, if you like to fish out of the boat, not a thing in the world wrong with it. It's very effective. Now, one of the writers asked me if I could have only one fly rod for trout all across the country, what would it be? Now, he wanted to be able to fish the small mountain streams where you got overhanging tree limbs. He wanted to be able to fish with small flies up to maybe a size 8, and also get out on the spring creeks out in Montana, and maybe fish some of the streams like Soda Butte up in the park. So if I wanted one rod to do all that, I didn't hesitate a minute. I would use the Scott G2 7-foot, 7-inch, 4-weight. That is short enough it'll get under the tree limbs. It's delicate enough to fish the Spring Creek, Armstrong, Nelson's, and all those. And yet it's still got enough power that you can go out there and throw a number 10 humpy with it if you want to. All right, let me look on here. Oh, yeah, everybody's asking me about leaders now. There is more confusion on leaders than anything we have. When we do our on-the-stream schools, we devote a tremendous amount of time to our leaders. Simply stated, on the smallmouth, we like the 9-foot, 2X, hand-tied, knotted leader, the one we call the bright butt leader. That is the finest bass leader I've ever used. It turns the flies over smoothly. It helps in strike detection. We build two of those SA indicators. I just got through building some last night. We build two of those SA indicators in those. But it's the Murray's Bright Butt 9-foot 2X leader. Now, if you want to get in the crystal clear mountain streams and you're afraid that fluorescent butt section is going to spook some fish, we do the same leader with clear mono in the butt, and we call that the classic leader. But again, it's a 9-foot tapered down to, for instance, on trout this time of the year, I'm down to 6X. But it's a hand-tied knotted leader, and these cast so much better than the knotless. A couple years ago, at your all's request, I developed a trout nymphing leader. Now, what we've done on that is use basically the classic formula, which is the hand-tied formula, and we're sticking two of those SA indicators in there. And that is an outstanding leader. Last thing on my list for today, an emergency knife. You bet your life I would carry a. Jeff gave me a little folding knife that I can easily, I keep one on my trout vest, one on my bass vest. I can easily flip that thing out for any needs I have. I almost bit the dust, I mean literally, one time out on a big river in Montana, we were using kick tubes. I was floating down the river. Unfortunately, the anchor hung. I proceeded to think I could choke up on the rope and choke up on the rope. I kept wrapping it around my arm to pull me back up to get out of there. And what I had actually done was sort of half-hitch that rope around my forearm. Wasn't a lot of fun getting out of there. Fortunately, I got out of there. Had I had that knife on my vest, snap, I'd have been out of the way free. This is all I'm going to cover today. If you have any questions on any of this, ring me at 540-984-4212. And if there are things you want me to cover in the future, I'll be glad to do that. This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. Thank you very much.